We definitely edit it down.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah. Well, like everything's going to be edited out that I just said?
Probably.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the three of us laughing at nothing.
Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the provocatively young, refreshingly hip, and consolingly lay editors of American media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Zach Davis.
Hi.
And Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
How are you guys doing?
Great.
What are you drinking, Zach?
So, our guest this week, Lino Rulli, the Catholic guy on SiriusXM's The Catholic Channel. We tweeted at him. We have lots of questions for you, but first, what's your drink? And so he recommended that we have Ketel One Vodka and Club Soda.
Yes. No, apparently this is part of his new diet.
Yes. So, forget what you heard, that gin.
Yeah, I always thought gin was the healthiest.
Yep.
It's vodka.
And evidently, Lino hangs around too many bartenders who have told him that actually, Ketel One and Club Soda is the lightest drink you can have.
I feel pretty light right now.
So, since it was low in caloric value, I decided to have three.
Right. Yes, and as Zach already said, our guest, Olga, this week
is Lino Rulli, who is an author, producer, and host of the Catholic Guy radio show on SiriusXM's The Catholic Channel. We'll be talking to him about radio. He's been doing this for 10 years.
Radio for 10 years, but like...
Broadcasting for longer,
yeah.
So to give you a sense of Lino's show, it's sort of the after work drive home. And it's him with a co-host. Right now it's Mark Hart, the Bible geek from Life Teen, who was actually a very big influence on my faith life when I was a teenager. But it's a way for... It's Catholic stuff, but in a non... super pious way, and so it's a way for Catholics to sort of be connected to a community of other Catholics in an informal setting, which is I think something we aspire to do also.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be around in 10 years.
Yeah, that's if Freaks and Geeks didn't make it past a couple seasons, I don't know if we're going to. America wasn't ready for that. I don't know if they're ready for us.
Fair enough. All right, time for Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. Well, what's our first story, Zach?
So, on Saturday, Pakistan laid to rest its most famous Catholic nun. She was known as Pakistan's Mother Teresa, Sister Ruf Pau, who was credited with eradicating leprosy from Pakistan. And so she had this funeral where she received full state honors, including a 19-gun salute for her service to not just the church, but to the country. You know, this is not a majority Christian nation. And so,
and not a country that's known for its religious tolerance.
Right. And so I think, you know, we, being the West and also here in America, famously neglect news from this part of the world often. And so I thought it was important to bring this to highlight Sister Ruf Pau.
Yeah, that's great.
What's next, Ashley?
So a new report from CBS News announces that Iceland is on its way to eliminating people with Down syndrome. Genetic counseling has gotten so widespread and accurate that most women have it. And once they find out that their fetus or child has Down syndrome, they go ahead with abortion. So they're basically at like 100% abortion rate for children with Down syndrome.
Well, I think it's important to point out there's a difference between eliminating a disease because you've cured it and just killing everyone with that disease, right?
Yes, that is not exactly healing anyone. There have been many studies showing, not that you need studies to dignify a human's worth, but the idea that a person with Down syndrome is, you know, can't have a fulfilling life is just patently false. There have been studies that's showing they are very happy with their lives. They like who they are. 96% like the way they look. They, you know, the idea that we need to like save these people from a life of suffering is just not a good excuse.
Yeah. I think people should look into the work of Jean Vanier.
Yes.
Who has been suggested for canonization on this show. Mm-hmm. I think Jim Martin.
Yeah,
suggested that we canonize him. But he founded Large Communities, and which works with a lot of people with Down syndrome, among other things. And I have a couple friends who live in Large Communities and are among the most joyful people that I know. So shout out to Katie and Evan Peterson, who are doing that. I'm thinking of them this week in this story.
Nice. All right, what's next, Olga?
So during a live CNN town hall this past Tuesday, Sister Erica Jordan, a Dominican nun from Wisconsin, kind of confronted Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, asking him how his Catholic beliefs sort of align with his politics, especially, you know, church teaching that tells us to prioritize the poor and to care about them, to which Ryan stated that he agrees with her sentiment and added that for him, church teaching calls for, and I quote, upward mobility that means economic growth, that means equality of opportunity. The sister was not very happy about this, and he got a lot of boos.
Well, based on her facial expression.
Yeah, I'm sorry, based on her facial expressions, I'm not going to make assumptions, but she didn't look happy about this, and he got a lot of boos as he was speaking, too.
Yes, and one could interpret Paul Ryan's facial expression as smug? Too much? But he sort of had this like aha moment. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use my canned answer. But so preferential option for the poor actually just means treating everyone the same for Paul Ryan. Ashley, are you going to stick up for...
Why would you think I would stick up for...
I think that in general, you like to stick up for conservatives, particularly when they are...
Yes.
Misrepresented.
I would agree with that. Yes. As the daughter of two lovely conservatives and someone who sometimes identifies as conservative, I do that. And I will say this. It's when people go after motivations that I tend to, you know, want to push back. So I would not say that Paul Ryan is disingenuous in his Catholic faith. I think he believes what he believes. I think he, when he says upward mobility, he means raising people out of poverty. That said, I'm not going to defend the idea that preferential option for the poor actually means equality of opportunity, because it clearly does not.
Right. That's an important thing. You know, say you have a group of people that need shoes, you don't just give them all size 7 shoes. That would be equality of opportunity. So our next story comes from
the great state of Virginia.
The great state of Virginia.
Where our own Ashley is from.
It's had a rough couple of weeks.
Yes, yeah. It has.
For sure. And this story comes from the Diocese of Arlington. A priest, Father William Aitchison, well, he wrote a letter, an op-ed in a newspaper, where he confessed to more than 40 years ago being a member of the KKK. I brought this story because it's interesting on many levels. One is he outed himself. It doesn't sound like it was uncovered or he blackmailed or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he turned himself in, announced that he was stepping down. So he's sort of like going, you know, taking a break from being in any type of public involvement. He wrote this and sort of hasn't been reached for comment from the media as of today. And so he wrote an op-ed in the Arlington Catholic Herald about his involvement and how the events in Charlottesville, which is not too far from Arlington, sort of sparked this call to conscience within him to come clean about this.
A cynical interpretation of this would be that he, after everything that was happening in Virginia, feared that he was going to be exposed and wanted to get ahead of the scandal.
Right.
And there are people making that case. There's an African-American family from Maryland who, in response to this story, came out, said 40 years ago they had suffered a cross burning at the hands of this former Klansman, this Catholic priest. And so they say apology is nice, but certainly not enough.
But I think it's a great first step, even though the cynicism, it's fair, you know, especially if you were someone who suffered at the hands of what his actions 40 years ago. But, you know, he did this when he was a student, and he talks about how he was radically transformed by Christ afterwards. And coming forward, especially in a day and age where our own political leaders can't even be explicit and acknowledge their own wrongdoing, I think it's a great first step. It's not easy, and I don't think it excuses how he's made these families feel, but I think that it is important to see, especially our Catholic leaders kind of taking this first step. And, you know, he's calling out other bigots and racists and telling them that their hatred is not going to help them, that they need to be redeemed. And for people who are within these movements, it's not going to come from necessarily from Black Lives Matter activists. It's going to come from mm-hmm. someone who was involved the same way they were, telling them like, hey, I was there too, but here's a way for us to become better, you know?
Yeah. Have you guys read about this guy, Derek Black? He was the son of the founder of Stormfront, which is like the white nationalist or white supremacist website. And he was a young white nationalist. And then he went to college, made friends with Jewish people, and kind of had this conversion experience, and ended up coming out about his past in the Southern Poverty Law Center website. And he went there not because he wanted to reach anti-racist, but because he knew that all the white nationalists read this website as like their gossip magazine, and he wanted to tell his own community, like, look, I understand you. I believed this
right.
for 20 years, and this is why I'm, you know.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about white allies in racial reconciliation, this mm-hmm. is what we're talking about. We're talking about people like this Catholic priest who stepped down, people like Derek who are calling out other supremacists, other racists, etc.
There's a, you know, a lot of buzz after Charlottesville to, you know, identify people and try to get them fired from their jobs and make it publicly, you know, shameful to be a white supremacist. And some people pointed out, like, no, that this type of like reconciliation, reintegration is what we need to combat this sin. Mm-hmm. And for me, that really points out the difference between God's time, the Kairos, and our time, Chronos, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you have to balance that reconciliation doesn't happen on a schedule. This priest, it took him, you know, 40 years.
Right.
People of color don't have 40 years to, you know, stay safe, right?
Right.
So, that's a super tough balance about God's mm-hmm. slow work and our human affairs. We've got another story that sort of is stemmed from the, you know, event that was Charlottesville. I mean, this is that event alone sparked a number of conversations and events happening around the country. And a statue of a Catholic saint was defaced in sort of the, I don't know if it was like a movement to sort of get rid of Confederate statues, but also statues that represented any type of injustice.
Yeah. So in Charlottesville, that was sparked by the nominal reason for the white nationalists and supremacists being there was to protest the taking down of the statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. And then 1 week later, on the other side of the country, in California, the statue of Saint Junipero Serra, he was the Spanish missionary to California, his statue was defaced at the Mission San Fernando Church in the Mission Hills of Los Angeles. So there was a statue of this saint. He was canonized very recently by Pope Francis. Someone spray painted murder and put red paint on the statue. Sarah with his arm around a young Native American child. Mm-hmm. So the reason, you know, he was canonized in 2015, and there was a good deal of controversy around.
This is when Pope Francis was here.
I was actually at his canonization mass in D.C.
Trying to get you to say that.
I was there. This was controversial because he is connected to the Spanish Empire that was coming to California, and these missions that he set up along the coast, you know, they were for evangelization, but there was abuse. There was people were forced to work there, often for no wage. They were abused. Their culture was taken from them. So the idea of the Catholic Church lifting this person up as a saint is
problematic
for many people.
Yeah. I want to preface it by saying, one, tear down all the Confederate statues. I'm still very pro that. I don't think you need to like look at this as an example of why we shouldn't. I think that's incorrect.
You don't buy like the slippery slope argument?
No. I don't. Father Jim McDermott, when around the time...
Yeah, I was going to bring this up.
Around the time that Junipero Serra was canonized, wrote out a list of things to keep in mind when talking about the canonization, and I thought it was super helpful, and it's super helpful now. Yeah. One is to acknowledge the hard truths. You know, yeah, there's a tendency to deflect or say, you know,
downplay the abuse that happened,
right? And it's not without justification. Sarah's treatment of Native peoples was far better than the Spanish soldiers, but also, all of that happened within a context of total devastation. You know, half mm-hmm. the Native people in California died because of diseases brought from Spain.
Yeah.
So this is a broader historical context that you have to acknowledge and talk about. I think there's an insight from Ignatian spirituality here, is that in the context of terrible things happening, you don't need to justify any of these past mistakes, but you can look at, you know, sometimes consolations happen in very dark periods in your own life, right? And so we can have examples of grace and conversion and God's presence in the world in a dark moment in history, within a dark context. And you don't need to justify those contexts or mistakes.
Wait,
that
are you saying that Sarah was a light point in a dark point of history?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I think that's what I would say. I think that's what the church would say too in their canonization. Not to play down the dark point in history in any means. You don't need to justify that at all. But I think, you know, is God present in that, even in these dark points, is something we look for in our own lives, but also in history.
Today, we're pleased to welcome Lino Rulli, the host of The Catholic Guy on SiriusXM's The Catholic Channel. Welcome to Jesuitical.
This is the best, because...
That's what we like to hear.
We love to hear that.
So when you guys were between 4 and 7 was when I started broadcasting.
Wow.
And we never started drinking right before the show. Now, sometimes we have to drink during a show, and I always need to have a drink after the show. But this is revolutionary. I really like this.
So, Lino, what makes you the Catholic guy and not just a Catholic guy?
It's all about copyright. It's copyright and trademark.
Got it.
Once you get in there first.
So, would you describe your work as a ministry? You know?
No.
No. Just a job?
Well, it's not just a job. It's a job I absolutely love. And the only reason I don't call it a ministry is because if you're an artist or a musician and all of these things, internally you can see it as a ministry, but I think you first have to see yourself as an artist. You have to see yourself as a professional. I come at it as I'm a broadcaster, and I have chosen to talk about Catholicism. But first and foremost, I want to be a broadcaster, and I want to be an entertainer, and I want people to listen to this program, whether or not they are Catholic, whether or not they believe in what I'm saying. And if I started seeing it only as a ministry, I think I would be looking at the content differently, and I would be looking at the way I approach topics differently. And I want to be seen as a broadcaster before I'm seen as a Catholic broadcaster.
Mm, you have cited Howard Stern as a big influence on you.
Yes.
Has that ever gotten you into hot water?
Almost every day, but no, I can't say every single day. I've got 3 big influences in my life: Howard Stern, David Letterman, and John Paul II. When John Paul II died, that was the only pope I'd ever known. That was, I mean, I've met him, but I don't mean it like that. I meant the only guy I ever saw wearing white, other than in photos, was John Paul II. And so those were always my 3 main influences. And now I work at SiriusXM, and Howard and the guys are all part of my family, if you will. They're all part, you know, my friends and all of this. And for whatever reason, I don't actually know the answer to this, but I receive a lot of criticism because of that. And I don't know where the criticism comes from. To be influenced by somebody seems to be a positive thing, which gets back to your question earlier about ministry versus, you know, when I say, well, I want to learn how Howard Stern does radio, what made him one of the most influential broadcasters in history, not because I'm going to be, but because I want to learn some techniques or something that that he has done, which makes me perhaps less of a failure than I am.
You also have a master's degree in theology.
Not that you can tell.
No, so how has that influenced? Has it influenced?
No.
Well,
when I got the master's degree, here, the long story short.
Should we go to grad school?
No. Yeah. No.
Will it make us better podcasters?
No. No, the making you better podcasters is doing what you're doing right now, putting the hours in of getting the experience of broadcast. I got a master's degree in theology because, ironically, I had a bachelor's in communications and realized media wasn't for me. I wanted to devote my life more to God. And so I went and got a master's in theology, and I really wanted to work for the church and do all of that. And then one thing led to another and led me into broadcasting. And then it turns out I prefer to work in Catholic media than any other form. So even about Howard Stern, years ago, I did get a job offer to work there. And I decided, no, I'm going to stick with, I know this is the dumbest thing I've ever done.
I'm going to stay with that Catholic money.
Yes, that Catholic money's where it's at. So I got the master's degree because I love God, I love the church, but at least from where I come from, I don't think most people who are listening to my radio show are looking for a master's degree level conversation. They're looking for a few laughs. And if I can tell them something about God or something about the church along the way, all the better.
What keeps your listeners engaged? What have you found is the most engaging parts of your show? What do they gravitate most towards?
It turns out I'm crazy. And my therapist knew this. I knew this. I say a lot of stupid things because I think a lot of stupid things. And somehow that's entertainment for them. And then what I try to do is I try to tie it into with the Catholicism. I'll give you an example of a story last week that we got a lot of reaction to was, I'm married now, but before I was married, the first thing I would do when I would get home is I'd take my pants off.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, yeah,
like I'd close the door behind me and I would just take my pants off.
Oh, okay, so.
I'd throw them wherever I wanted.
Well, you didn't have roommates.
No.
Oh, okay,
no,
all right.
He's not 23, Zach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're talking about more like when I was 34 and
31. Okay, yeah.
And I would throw the pants. We're on a chair or on a couch or whatever. And I wasn't a nudist, but I would just, that's how I would live my life. And I'd walk around and maybe I'd throw on a pair of shorts later on or not. If I order some delivery, I'll put a pair of shorts on when a delivery guy shows up.
Because you're a stand-up guy.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not as creepy as I sound. Right. Now, that usually gets a bit of a laugh because people go, well, what an odd, that apparently that's odd behavior that the first thing you do is take your pants off and throw them wherever you want in your living room. And then the next day I do the same thing. And then eventually there's just clothes all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to spiritual direction for a period of time. Not that anybody notices, but I went to spiritual direction. And we talked a little bit about discipline in my life. And my spiritual director suggested the first thing I do is think about my pants. To which I said, well, yeah, I would agree with you on that, but on a variety of levels, certainly. I think when I go to confession, the priest usually says, yeah, it's an issue with your pants, isn't it? Yes, it is, Father. Now that you mention it, I hadn't thought of it this way. So I will tell something stupid like pants, mm-hmm. and then be able to tie it into, actually, I learned a lesson about one of the first things you learn, I guess if you go to seminary, one of the first things you learn about spiritual direction is be disciplined. And the first way you're going to learn to be disciplined, if you want to be disciplined in the spiritual life, is are you making your bed in the morning? Are you throwing your pants wherever you want as soon as you get home? If you can start discipline with something like making your bed, you may be more disciplined when it comes to virtue or vice as once the bed is made.
But maybe not, so I'm going to stick with not making the bed if that's until it's conclusive.
Yeah, go ahead. Listen, I make my bed every day. Look how I'm turned out. So I think you actually are probably smart for not doing that.
So you've been on the air for years, and you are very vulnerable and very open on the air. You've mentioned your therapist, and you've also, well, you're married now, but you talked about being single and looking for a girlfriend. How do you sustain that? How are you so comfortable being so vulnerable and so open?
I don't think you can ever overshare. Now, you can overshare information about other people. So I could tell you something about my wife right now that she would feel, well, that went a little far. But I think two things, and they are not mutually exclusive, but about Catholicism and about broadcasting. The first one's about broadcasting. You're always looking for content. One of the first things I learned was one of my former program directors told me, Lino, the best thing that could happen to you is on your way to work, somebody will come and kick you in the groin because now you've got something to talk about. And Regis Philbin had once given advice to actually now Ryan Seacrest. He was always Ryan Seacrest, but Ryan Seacrest now that he has the Little Kelly Show, whatever it's called. And Regis said, go out every night and do something so you have something to talk about. So in broadcasting, sharing is probably the best thing you can do. But I think in Catholicism, most importantly, it's the thing that's done the least often in an authentic way and is needed the absolute most. So if I can hear somebody who's struggling with prayer, if I can hear somebody go, there are times that I doubt God's existence, that to me is so much more helpful to be authentic like that. And what actually I dislike even more is when somebody fakes it. And then years later goes, oh, I have to tell you, 10 years ago, I was really struggling with faith.
Mm.
And they think that's authentic. I go, no, I need to know authenticity now. I need to know authenticity about, you know, and especially like we've talked about public confession for centuries in the church. But nobody wants to talk about what their sins are. In my mind, it's only when you can talk about, like for me, my sins, pride, lust, and jealousy. Those are my three top sins. I'm not super greedy just because I work in Catholic media. It's not an option. I'm moderately slothful, but like pride.
Pants.
My pants. Okay, ladies, that's more of a comfort thing. Take my pants off. But like right there, I go, okay. And I'm happy on the air to talk exactly what my sins are and why I feel like I'm committing these sins, both psychologically and spiritually, what is causing me to do this. The more I think people can share about this, I think the healthier the church is, because it becomes a lot more transparent, becomes a lot more honest of a church, and it in some ways builds a little bit more community. Because while we all want the Pope to be holy, isn't there something fantastic about the Pope that we know the Pope sins? Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Pope sins makes me feel a little bit better about being Catholic.
Hmm.
You did meet two girlfriends through the radio show, right?
Sure. More than two. Sure. I've met several. We used to do games on the show. My wife doesn't let me play these games anymore. But
oh, man.
I know. She's
I wonder why.
Bit of a prude. I'll be honest with you. We used to play dating games on the air. Where just like the old dating game where you'd have three women on the other side and I would ask them certain questions and then I would meet them and we'd go out on dates. That's not weird at all. That's super normal, super healthy behavior. I know, who are my bosses that are letting me get away with this?
You know, this sounds a little crazy, but my grandfather was a radio broadcaster for WCOL in Ohio, and he was hungry on air one night, and so he put out a call to his listeners to bring him a bowl of Wendy's chili. And so my grandmother hears this, brings the chili. He asks her out on a date. They go out on a date. That night, he proposes. She says, ask me tomorrow. He asks tomorrow. And they were married until he
and
died.
Here you are.
So, and here I am. So I've got to respect it. I'm going to be honest.
My wife has never brought me chili, so I don't know what that means about our relationship. This doesn't feel promising.
Bonnie Foundation, maybe.
Yeah, this is not promising. What is it that, what kind of chili was it?
It was Wendy's chili.
Wendy's chili.
It's like a buck. I bet it was like 10 cents back then.
Yeah, probably.
But it really wasn't the price that I thought was the crux of the conversation. It was like a dollar. It's like 10 cents. I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess this wouldn't be the place you would talk about it, but like, is there a part of your life that you wall off?
No.
No. There's literally like nothing you will not share.
Oh, there are things I won't share because
job.
No, I'm not really afraid of losing my job. There are things I won't share because either I don't think they'll make entertaining radio, mm-hmm. or because I'll get in trouble, or because it's inside Catholic baseball. Like, I'll have certain thoughts about the Catholic Church or people in the church that I'd be more than willing to share. But if I'm on the radio and I got a mainstream audience, you don't really care about what I think of this particular person. If anything, I'm giving more exposure to somebody I don't like, which I don't need to do. Mm-hmm. But then there are times in your life that I won't share. Like, sometimes a tragedy could happen in my life or somebody will die. And I go, well, but they don't pay me to go on the air and talk about that. I certainly am able to if I want. But I'm going to go on the air and try to make people laugh. So if it's not going to be entertainment and it's not going to be Catholic, chances are I'm not going to do it. But then there are certain things I know I can't share, again, about my wife or about friends. But I just learned that the hard way, because I would say something. Speaking of one of the women who I've met on my show, one of my girlfriends, I would say things about them on the air. I'd say, well, here's a particular thing she does, and she wouldn't like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I can't imagine why.
Me either. And none of them brought me chili. None of them. That's how you know they've all been bad relationships.
I have this experience, and I'm sure other people in this room can relate to it, is, you know, say you're at a bar and you're waiting to meet someone and the bartender just strikes up a conversation like, oh, what do you do? Oh, I work at a magazine. Oh, what magazine? Oh, it's a Catholic magazine. Oh, sweet. Here's everything I think about organized religion.
Yes.
Go.
Yes.
So you're really inviting that in your life by
being the Catholic guy. How do you deal with that? Do you ever get sick of it?
First of all, if I am at a bar, and it's tough to find times that I'm not at a bar, but when I'm at a bar, if somebody asks what I do, I try to avoid the topic at all costs. And not because I'm ashamed of Catholicism, but exactly because I don't want to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody pushes me or they come on, just tell me, or somebody comes up and says, hey, I recognize you. And then the person next to me says, well, who are you? I always say, oh, nobody. I mean, this happened about a week ago. I was just walking down the street and a woman came up and said, hey, could I take a picture with you? I said, of course. I mean, she listened to the show. She wasn't just like, wow, you have a really big nose. I'm visiting from Japan. I'd like to show my friends. And while we were chatting, she asked a different woman, hey, would you take a picture of the two of us? And the woman said, oh, are you famous? And I said, no, which is true. And she said, well, are you a comedian? I said, no, which is also true, but more sad right now. And as she took the picture, like, I was just avoiding it because I don't need to explain everything about Catholicism. Mm-hmm. But this probably says more about me than it says about my faith. I also, if somebody wants to tell me their whole spiel on organized religion, genuinely don't care. I used to be Catholic. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I used to weigh 10 pounds more. I don't know. Like, what was right. Okay. Yeah, I don't like religion. I don't like broccoli. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Wow. Look at all the things we have in common. We both have things we don't like in this world. What you don't like happens to be most important to me. So this probably wouldn't be the best friendship we'd have.
Yeah, you're yucking my yum, as the kids say.
Is that what they say?
Yeah, don't yuck my yum. If someone's like, I love socks, you don't be like, socks are stupid.
Wait, I've never heard this. Is this an Ohio thing?
I feel like it's a summer camp thing.
It's like
thing.
A 25-year-old
yeah.
thing.
Okay, we're too old. We're too old. It hasn't made its way up to the Bronx sack. I'm sorry.
It's on its way, though, I promise.
Yuck my yum.
Don't yuck my yum, man.
Come on, man. It sounds weird.
It sounds dirty.
Yeah, it sounds extreme.
I'm going on the air today, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to see what kind of hate mail I get.
Yeah, probably. Be like, hey, I was talking to Howard Stern the other day, and he
said, Lino, don't yuck my yum. Yuck my yum.
All right. So our last question we ask all
last,
our...
I'm only halfway
oh,
done
yeah.
with my
Wait,
drink.
No, yeah. take well,
you
drink.
Can, no, you got to chug it, then you can answer it. We ask all of our guests this. If you could canonize anyone, living or dead, Catholic or non-Catholic, who would it be? But it can't be yourself because we know you wrote a book about this in 2013.
That's right. So taking me out of it.
Taking yourself out
but
of
it. But people should buy that book. If
right.
Yeah, if why not? Yeah. I got nothing
What's
better
it
to
called?
Do. Yeah. So I got a book called Sinner and I got a book called Saint. And the saint one is why I should be canonized right away. Which actually got to the question you're asking because, of course, it's nonsense to imagine I'd ever be canonized. The first person that comes to mind that I've always said should be canonized is Michelangelo, primarily because he was an ugly Italian. It's something I could relate to. but a guy who does that much work for the church. And then there's some, you know, dopey nun from the 800s who's canonized. She died of the plague. But Michelangelo created some of the greatest work of art in history. To this day, 20,000, 30,000 people are in that Sistine Chapel thinking about God. So he should be canonized.
That's good.
Okay.
However, what I really would say, let's not make this about me, but I was going to say everybody's grandma. I was going to say my grandma.
We've gotten that answer five times. Yeah.
But you know why? Here's the reason why. And it doesn't, you know, it could be my mom. It could be my grandma. It could be what the church needs to do. And maybe this is the answer you get constantly is she needs to slow down with the canonization of priests and nuns, not because they don't do great work. And again, dying of the plague obviously is not a lot of fun, so you should be canonized or whatever. And the 800s, I'm sure, was a very powerful moment in the church's history. But but my point is, how many single moms right now have been canonized in the church? And do they see themselves in the church? Or do they see themselves as, oh, well, I'm just a single mom. I can't go to heaven. I can't be a saint because I'm not a nun or I didn't start a religious order and I didn't die of the plague. So not that my grandma was a single mom. But the idea of it needs to be a lot more, in my mind, women, even though I know Michelangelo was an exception, it needs to be a lot more women who haven't done anything marvelous in the eyes of the world in terms of building a building or starting a religious order or ministering to the sick, but somebody who just lived their life and was, you know, not exactly perfect. But lived their life and made a ton of mistakes, but still went to church every Sunday and missed a few, of course. And then they die and then they get canonized. That's who I want to see the church. Not canonize the other ones, but I think, you know, there's a handful of lay people in the church and there's a handful of women in the church. And I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world if some of those folks who represent Catholicism and actually keep the church alive every single day would be canonized more often.
I Amen. Like that.
Where would the church be without grandmas?
Yeah.
All right. And where can people find you on the air?
Thank you for pointing out on the air instead of where can people find me, because that's usually more of a my address. The Catholic Guy Show is on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. It's the afternoon drive show. It's me. CatholicGuy.com.
Every day, yeah?
Yeah, not Saturday, Sundays, of course. But Monday through Friday, they put me to work like a trained monkey.
And it goes up as a podcast.
And we do a podcast. Oh, so that if people are too cheap to pay for satellite radio,
There we go.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. This is fun. I'm just going to stick with my drink here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Ashley, you've been doing a lot of audio stuff today?
Yes. Just came back from America This Week, America's other podcast, hosted by Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber. It's on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129, and you can find it on our website, americanmagazine.org, or your wherever you get your podcast. It's called America This Week. All right, now it's time for some listener feedback. First, we have an email from Lauren Gonzalez, who listened to last week's episode in which we talked about the church's response to Charlottesville and whether you heard about those events at Mass that Sunday or not. And she said, last week's podcast helped me to realize that I could be the one to create such a forum to talk about these issues. So she asked, do you have any reading recommendations for someone keen to learn more about the tradition of Catholic involvement in social activism? And do we ever?
Yeah, we posted this on Twitter, and we've gotten a lot of really great responses.
This taught me we have really smart listeners.
We really do. Oh, man.
So Woke Space Jesuit wrote in and offered Bach and Connor's Church and Revolution, Meister's Social Catholicism and Catholic Labor. Greg wrote in two, you know, super accessible and obvious ones, Dorothy Day's The Long Loneliness and Dan Berrigan's No Bars to Manhood. But several people suggested anything by either Dorothy Day or Daniel Berrigan is a great place to start.
That's a good place to start.
Agreed.
And there were really a ton of great answers. Yeah. So I would go to our Twitter feed at Jesuitical Show and just kind of peruse through those.
Yeah,
you'll have your fall semester reading for you.
Exactly. We'll put a link in the show notes.
And also, if you haven't given an answer but want to, feel free, because as Zach said, you guys are clearly smarter than we are.
Another email came from Anthony, who wrote in. He also appreciated our conversation. And he spent time, before he was Catholic, in a United Church of Christ seminary in Chicago. And so he appreciated, Ashley, your points that it's really tough to write, prepare, and deliver homilies. And the thing that he pointed out was he didn't expect a homily, but he wanted it addressed in some way with a prayer or acknowledging the theological tradition on this issue within the church to give the lay people a framework in which to think of it, because a lot of times we're struggling. But he also thought it was important for everyone to find their voice and step up. And so he also contributed to the thread too. So Ashley, you inspired.
Yes. I didn't get the last word last week, but
you inspired someone.
I always get the last laugh.
Yes.
Oh, God.
All right. Time for consolations and desolations. Zach, what do you have?
This week, I have a desolation. So someone who is a good friend of the show, but also a good friend of myself and I think other people around the table. Father James Martin is a coworker, but he's a friend. And he's been very much in the news and the public conversation with his new book, Building a Bridge, on the reconciliation opportunities between the LGBT community and the Catholic Church. And he's getting dragged through the mud in some areas. And I think this week I just sort of snapped. It's because it's a weird thing to see people just like talk smack about a friend of yours in a very public form.
Yeah, and this is happening a lot on like Twitter and
other. It's easier for people to do things like this on Twitter than in person.
And I don't know, it reminded me just like, because you want to speak up, because I mean, if it's like, you know, hearing your best friend talked about in high school at the lunch table next to you, you think you would like, the best version of yourself would, you know, say something and then, but.
Yeah, so the desolation would
be. The desolation is one, feeling helpless because it's, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to change anyone's
Engaging
mind.
Engaging is not really going to.
Yeah. And also, so one, I think feeling helpless, but also participating in it. I, you know, fired off some tweets that were maybe not wise, maybe did not.
Maybe broke the America social media.
Maybe I was.
Guidelines.
Maybe too snarky, too mean. So I think that is my desolation, is feeling helpless when seeing a friend dragged through the mud and then also just being involved in that terribleness.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Olga?
Well, I've got a consolation this week, and it actually involves Zach. So I hope that it helps you feel better. So last week I mentioned that I was feeling very down with everything that was happening with Charlottesville and my father getting stopped by ICE. And I had been toying with the idea of writing something about this, but it's not easy when you're talking about your personal life and writing. It's just, you know, it was something that I was going back and forth. So I kind of sent a draft to Zach. And I was like, well, even before I sent him the draft, I was like, should I write about this? And he was just like, you totally should. Then I sent you the draft and he was like super encouraging. And then I just got it ready, went off, whatever. So in a moment where I was feeling very hopeless and just not, you know, I mentioned last week that it's hard to be in a white space and when you're dealing with these issues of race, but knowing that Zach was there kind of encouraging me to write was a moment where I was kind of like, okay, even in a moment where you're completely hopeless, you can totally see God in this person who you see every day and who just really believes in a product you're creating, even when you don't. So that was my consolation for this week.
And everyone should go read this article. It's at americanmagazine.org. It's called My Father Was Pulled Over by ICE Agents the Same Day Charlottesville Happened. And it's a very powerful article. So,
thank you.
Olga, yeah. Thank you for
mostly
having
your
light.
Mostly thanks to Olga, but kind of thanks to Zach.
No, I just, Olga, you've got a light and I'm glad you let it shine.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
You're not going to break into song right now?
Why would
He's
I
He's holding
do
back
that?
Tears right now.
I've never sang on this show.
So what about you, Ashley?
I also have a consolation. I can't believe we got through this whole show without talking about the total eclipse of the sun.
Oh, wow. I completely
that
forgot.
Happened this week. Very
total
spiritual.
Eclipse of the sun.
Thank you. I'm set that up for you. Okay. So Monday was the total eclipse of the sun. My older brother, Chris, went down to South Carolina, where my mom's side of the family is, to be in the path of totality. And while he was down there, in the moment when the moon moves from covering the sun, it's called the diamond moment when the sun peeks back out, and he asked his girlfriend to marry him.
With a diamond?
With a diamond!
Oh my God. Oh,
shoot.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, if you knew Chris, it was just like, leave it to Chris to like up show, show up the
It's like any other
eclipse.
Proposal in your family is just not going to hold up to this.
No. But so, I mean, obviously that was very exciting. The consolation is my, I don't think Chris would take offense at this. He's always been kind of like the black sheep, prodigal son in the family. So for the past 10 years, he was in med school, becoming a doctor. He was really not interested in relationships. He just kind of lived alone and was very closed off. And if you asked him about like, hey, you gonna get married? He'd just be like, I'll get married when I'm 60. But then he met this wonderful woman, Dina. And you could just like see the slow work of God on him, like pulling him out of his little cave, and opening up his heart to first to Dina, but then to even to like his family in new ways mm-hmm. through her. Like over 4th of July, we spent time with the two of them and he was cooking us dinner and like grocery shopping and going to church with us. And it was just like this very, hopeful side of him that I hadn't seen in a while. Seeing that taught me one, like to have hope for people I love and care about that they'll find their way mm-hmm. and to like patience to like let it happen in God's time.
Right.
It's worth
really
waiting.
Beautiful. Congrats to Chris and what's his fiance's name?
Dina.
Chris and Dina.
Chris and Dina. We good?
We're good.
All right.
Well, we're done. I don't know if we're good.
I think we're pretty good.
We're good. Ketto One vodka.
All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by American Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup SJ and adult supervision provided by Sam Sawyer SJ. Engineering by Angelo Jesus Canta. Adverbs provided by Lauren Gonzalez. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. Special thanks this week to Anna Marchese, our former intern, who randomly ran into Lino Rulli in front of St. Paul's Church and was the one responsible for getting him on our show.
Nice.
So that was good. You can follow us on Twitter. Check out that awesome list of social activism books at Jesuitical Show. And please subscribe to us on iTunes wherever you get your favorite podcasts and leave us a review. This week, shout out to Four Letter Word, Nickname, and C. Strickland for leaving us reviews.
Also, tell your friends, podcasts are free. People are confused a lot. They have to pay for this. They don't.
No.
You can send me money if you want for rent, but the podcast is free.
It is free. And send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americanmedia.org. For American Media, I am Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura. We'll see you next week.